Hey there, welcome back to the Good Life Community Church podcast. It's so good to have you join us yet again. Today we're hearing from Mike Hardy and he's sharing on commitment. It's called Commitment 101 and we're looking at Psalm 101, if you can see what he's done there. So I hope you enjoy the message and make sure you ask yourself, what do I need to commit to in this season of life to reflect the image of God? I hope you enjoy.
All right, so how many people came in here this morning and you went, I'm on top of the world? I just want to find out who those people are here this morning. I'm going to get a show of hands. All right, awesome. One, two, three, four. All right, awesome. I know there's more than that. How many of you are like, I'm not right on the peak, the top of the world, but I'm like, I'm going good. I got stuff to celebrate. Can I get a show of hands? All right, fantastic. All right, how many people, now don't put your hands up for this part. You're like, you have no idea the emotional energy it took to turn up here this morning. Can I get at least an acknowledgement that that could be the reality for some people? I just want to say, you guys are legends. there is just some days when it's like hard work to go anywhere, right? It's hard to turn up. And I know on any given Sunday, and we share this with our team regularly, As Paul says in the book of Romans, we weep with those who weep and mourn with those who mourn, and we celebrate and we're happy with those who are celebrating and happy. That is the tension we walk in on any given day. And I was reminded this morning, as Trace and I are facing our own reality, that I'm like, yeah, far out. Some days just like, man, life's great. And you can very quickly forget how life can be challenging when life's great. And then the next minute, you're like, oh, life's not great right this minute. Last night and today, we have a couple of kids and our youngest, he has some really huge challenges in life. And he finds it incredibly difficult to regulate sometimes. And so that's a battle. And I got here this morning and I was sitting in my car in the car park. And I just went, oh, I don't know if I can do this today. You ever have those days? And I just went, I've got emotionally negative. It's like holes in the bucket. And I'm tired. And I'm like, who else can I text to preach today? Rob did it for me the other week. Who else could I throw under the preaching bus? And but I just sat there for a moment and I was just reminded, even when I shared the other week, and it was just a reminder, my grace is sufficient for you. That's what the Apostle Paul said when he was faced with a thorn in his side, which was a metaphor for him facing some battle, that there's all these ideas around what that was all about. But his declaration is, when things aren't going the way you hope, God's grace meaning gift, is sufficient for us. He will sustain us. He will help us. He will heal us. And I'm sharing that this morning not to get pity, other than I'm so grateful for our team, because I shared with our team this morning when we prayed and I felt my spirit uplifted, because when you join together and you pray and you know you're not alone, you go, hey, we can do this. We can do this. Now, I want to talk this morning about commitment. And I titled the message Commitment 101, and you can work out why I called it that later on. And if you're really smart, you can come up at the end of the service and go, I worked it out! And then you can go home feeling proud of yourself that you worked out the little mystery of the title. But I want to talk about commitments this morning, and I want to begin by reading a psalm. And this psalm kind of sits about two-thirds through the psalms that we have. It's called Psalm 101. And I'm going to read it to you, and I'd love you to just absorb this as we read this together. It says in your Bible, a psalm of David. We'll get back to that in a second. This is what it says. I will sing of your love and justice to you, Lord. I will sing praise. I will be careful to lead a blameless life. When will you come to me? I will conduct the affairs of my house with a blameless heart. I will not look with approval on anything that is vile. I hate what faithless people do. I will have no part in it. The perverse of heart shall be far from me. I will have nothing to do with what is evil. Whoever slanders their neighbor in secret, I will put to silence. Whoever has haughty eyes and a proud heart, I will not tolerate. My eyes will be on the faithful in the land, that they may dwell with me. The one whose walk is blameless will minister to me. No one who practices deceit will dwell in my house. No one who speaks falsely will stand in my presence. Every morning I will put to silence all the wicked in the land. I will cut off every evildoer from the city of the Lord. Psalm 108. Wow. Interesting. What is this psalm all about? Now, scholars and theologians have had lots of debates about what this psalm is, what its purpose is, its intention is. There's kind of a general consensus that this fits in kind of what is broadly referred to as the royal psalms. It's not in the strict group of those royal psalms, but it's a psalm that relates to the king stating a declaration over his own life and his commitment to rule and lead in a certain kind of way, his personal commitments, the kind of culture and commitments that he wants to have within his realm as leader and then in the land socially and economically. What's the kind of environment you want to have? And some people have suggested that this was a psalm that David wrote and declared at the beginning of his kingship over Israel. And that some of the lines in this were direct statements to contrast what he wanted his leadership and kingship to be compared to, say, the evil rulers in Judah. But we don't actually know. And there are some other theories that say that though this is called a Psalm of David, that some of these psalms were called a Psalm of David to be actually psalms of future kings, making reference to David as the king in whose household that they are a future king. And that this would be the kind of psalm or statement that would be declared. It was often sung in the palace like a hymn. And this would be something that would be regularly declared as a commitment from whoever is leading and of the people of that royal household to say, this is what we're about. This is our commitments. These are our convictions. And so I really like we read from the New International Version of that psalm then, but I really love the way the New Revised Standard Version, which is a probably slightly more literal version, expresses this. And it begins in verse 1, and the writer of the psalm says, I will sing of loyalty and of justice. Now, that's slightly different to the NIV's translation of I will sing of your love and justice. And what we see in this is the commitment of this king to want to declare and sing what is it that is the nature and the character of the God in whose image this king should be reflecting personally and through this kingdom. And so there's a commitment here to say, I'm going to sing of loyalty, of justice. This is another way of saying the way things are intended to be, the way God intends them to be, this is the cry of my heart. I want to sing out this hope, this commitment, this passion, because this is the heartbeat of the God that I worship. This is how God wants things to be. And then I love the next line in verse 2. It says, I will study the way that is blameless. This is an intention of this king to say, I'm not just going to hope that I will live a blameless life. I'm not going to hope that I am a good king or a good ruler or leader. I need to study this. I need to really understand what does it mean to be blameless, or another way of saying that is to be pure in heart. That my intentions in the way I lead would actually reflect the image of the God that I worship. And then there's this interesting question. Now, in the NIV version that we first read out loud, he says, I'll be careful to lead a blameless life and ask this question, when will you come to me? But in the New Revised Standard Version, we see a slightly different aspect to that question, which ultimately means the same thing. But he asks the question, when shall I attain it? In other words, I'm going to study the way that is blameless. I want my life to be a life of integrity. The next verse, the next part of the verse, he declares, I will walk with integrity of heart. In other words, the core of who I am, I want to be whole, to be pure, to be good. I don't want there to be a contrast between my behavior and my values. I actually want there to be alignment. This is what integrity is at the end of the day. And so when he says, I want to have integrity of heart, that's what he's talking about. But in this question before, he asks, when shall I attain it? Now, I love this question because it's a great question when you reflect on your life. You ask yourself, and maybe you've prayed this before, and you said, God, I want to live a life of integrity. I want to have a pure heart. I want to have pure eyes. I want to live in such a way that my actions and my values, my commitment to love you and reflect you in the world in the way I live, are actually in alignment. But when we're honest with ourselves and we actually self-reflect, as the psalmist later says in Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24, Stephen Jeffs quoted this last week. The psalmist says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me on the path of righteousness. So there's this prayer to say, if there's anything that's not in alignment, if there's anything that's not integrous in my life, would you show me what that is? Now, when you pray that prayer, I don't know about you, but like lots of my prayers don't get answered the way I hope. Is anyone else in the same boat as me? Yeah, like the other night, I was visiting some family and I saw an Aston Martin on the street, and I shared it on social media, and I sent a message to my wife to say, I'm sorry, I felt like I deserved this car when I bought it. And so, of course, I didn't buy it. It was just a wonderful fantasy in my head of having just a spare random, well, you know, once all injustice is sorted in the world, there's no more poverty. I was like, and I ended up still with a spare $630,000. I thought, I'm getting that car. Like, I want that car. God, could I have that car? So far in my life, whenever I've prayed those prayers, could I have that, they haven't been answered. There is one prayer, though, that I get answered seriously so quickly. And it's, Lord, search my heart. Is there anything in my heart that offends you? And like, before I can even get out the end of the line, like, come on, God, give me a second. It's just like a conversation from 3 hours ago, potentially with someone who lives in my household, comes to mind where it's like, that was a bit arrogant the way you said that, or it wasn't very kind the way you said that, or even though you're always right, your tone wasn't right. You know, things like that. And I get these answers so quick. And in those moments, I realize there's a gap between who I want to be in reflecting the image of Christ in my life and actually how I'm living. Welcome to the spiritual life and journey of spiritual formation. And this is a gracious journey that we walk on, not in condemnation. This is the good news of the gospel of Jesus. We don't walk in condemnation. When something is revealed to you, when you realize, oh, I still have that attitude, what, I'm still harboring that bitterness, oh, I'm still being jealous about the person that owns that car, like those people are having that life experience, it's different to my life experience, and I realize, oh, some of these things are lingering on. This is not a moment for me to live in perpetual guilt and condemnation and shame. That's not in the kingdom of heaven. In the kingdom of God, where Christ is king and leader and ruler, it's an invitation to walk in liberty and freedom. And when we see these things and that gap between who we are and who we want to be, it's an opportunity for us to realize God is graciously showing me so that I can walk away from that into freedom and grace and mercy, into healing and restoration. And this is what repentance is all about. And even though that word's been hijacked by a lot of angry preachers over the years to make people feel bad, it's actually a beautiful word that's just an invitation to say, hey, turn from that way that's not how you want to be and how you want to, that's going to destroy you and ruin your life and the lives of others around about you, and walk in the way of light and life and freedom and mercy and goodness and justice. Like, walk into the life of freedom. Paul says in Corinthians, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. That's the invitation you're invited into. So the next time you pray that prayer and you're like, oh, I'm not praying that prayer. I heard Mike talk about it. That's not fun. I'll just go back to the other prayers, even if they're unanswered. No, no, you don't have to be scared of it. If you realize, oh, the Lord's just shown me something about my heart or the gap between who I'm called to be or even want to be and where I'm currently at, the dad I want to be compared to the dad I am, the husband I want to be compared to the husband that I am, I'm going to actually listen to the voice of Jesus. This is not an opportunity for shame and guilt. It's an opportunity for freedom and invitation to a new way to be human. And when I walk in that, that gap begins to close and we give praise to God for that. But it begins with an intention, like the king says in this passage. It's an intention, it's a commitment. Multiple times throughout this psalm, in English, we have the phrase, I will. It's a statement of intention and conviction and commitment. I will sing of the loyalty and justice of God. I will study the way that is blameless. I will walk with integrity of heart. That's a commitment. But the question is, when shall I attain it? Is a question that speaks to the humility of the writer of the psalm, who's saying, I haven't attained it yet. I need, this is not me just going, I will be awesome as a man of God or a woman of God. I will be an amazing pastor. I will be an amazing king. No. God, when will this happen? When will you come? It's a cry to say, without you, I can't live this life. All these commitments will fall short. And I will find myself living in guilt and shame because I'm trying to do it by myself, as opposed to saying, God, it's another way of saying, come to me, may your Spirit within me empower me, transform me, and change me so that I become the person that you want me to be. Now, I want to share just for a couple of minutes before we wrap up around the idea of commitments, because this Psalm 101 is a commitment psalm in which we hear the commitment of the king, the beginning of it personally, a personal conviction, and then a commitment to the kind of kingdom that he wants to have. Now, we know that David was a pretty broken, messed up person. Like, he'd be dead set canceled, there's no doubt about it today. Part of me thinks probably should be. Like, you think about it for a second. Like, we're all like super gracious and kind to David, and we like his psalms and his hymns, and like it's cool, which probably speaks of the mercy and the justice of God a whole lot more than how we feel. But here's the thing: like, the guy did a horrendous thing. We simplify it and we play it down for kids' church, right? But like, he did a horrific abuse and then kills the husband of the woman that he's with after he's abused her. And, like, he did things that, now, I understand the time in history, it was a militaristic society, and there was a whole bunch of things that took place that were, like, not part of our culture and our world in some ways to this day. But, like, he messed up pretty bad as a king. He abused his leadership as the king. He forgot who he was. He's anointed by Samuel to be a good king after a really bad king, Saul, that went before him, who was corrupt. And then he allowed his heart to become corrupted and used his power and privilege and the opportunity he had to use that power over somebody else and destroy other people's lives, their community and their families. But we have this psalm, a psalm of David, of the kings, as a declaration that we need to come back to this. We need to return to these commitments. We need to return to these convictions. And we don't know exactly when it was written. All we know is we have this psalm, and the intention for us as God's people, as the New Testament authors encourage us to do, is to use the Hebrew scriptures we've been given as an opportunity to remind ourselves what it means for us to walk with integrity of heart, worshiping our God, the God of justice and mercy, who is loyal, who is faithful, and reflect the image of God through our lives in everything we do and everything we say. And when it comes to commitments, there's a funny thing. Our commitments always need to begin with, for me, I will. For me, I will. Not, we will, I will, so you will. Which has so often been what religion has been about. And there are a lot of benefits to making commitments, and there are dangers to making commitments in how you're going to live your life. Let me talk about this for a moment. So I grew up in a church that I have a lot of fond memories of, that I'm grateful for in so many ways, but it was also a highly fundamentalist church environment that was full of rules and regulations that had nothing to do with Jesus' invitation. The intentions and the hopes were probably pure, but the way it played out were dysfunctional. Like, there was rules for everything. It was like, if you listened to bad, evil rock music, you burnt your records. Records are these, like, plastic things. You may not have, I mean, like, they're coming back, but, like, I don't know if you know what they are. And then there was tapes, and then there was CDs, and then there was mini discs, you know, but, and there was VCR, and there was all these things that you guys have not heard about, or maybe when you went to the museum you saw. But when I was a kid, I grew up in the era where at youth group, we brought the bad stuff in our life and we burnt it in the fire at the backyard of the youth group where we were hanging out. And like anything that was bad, we burnt it. And it felt kind of good in the moment until you got home and went, where's that song that, oh no. Like everything was evil when I was a kid. It was like, you know, Home and Away was evil. Actually, probably is a little bit. But, you know, everything was wrong. So in the church I grew up in, it was like, you know, alcohol was evil and bad. And we had a version of, you know, it was like, but Jesus turned the water into wine. Oh, but it was it was non-alcoholic wine. Anyone else have that? Get told that? I got told that. I was like, oh, okay, wow. Can't see that in the text, but yeah, wow. Wherever you guys get your info from, that's amazing. You know, like going to the movies was bad. I had a friend who went to a church. Our church wasn't as tight on the movie thing, but he never ever went to the movies. He was just like, oh no, we don't do that. I was like, why can't you go to the movies? Like, it's Dumbo the elephant. Like, what's so evil about that? It's like, no, that's pagan, it's evil, it's the world. And so there were rules. Why? Because someone went, that's unhelpful for me, and that doesn't help me want to walk in the way of Jesus. So because I'm the pastor of the church, none of you are doing it. You know, like, we're setting a rule. Like, it's like crazy. So, like, rules for everything. So I just grew up thinking there were certain verses in the Bible that had rules. Oh, we had commitments to stuff that I'm like, I just assumed it was in the Bible. Only to find out it wasn't. And this is the problem. There are benefits and there are dangers when you go beyond anything that Jesus invites you to, and you understand that in the Hebrew scriptures, the framework was about rules and laws and regulations, but the promise was always that the Holy Spirit would be poured out on all flesh, men, women, boys, girls, everyone gets the Spirit of God in them. And we're not going to be living under tablets of rules and regulations in that way. We're actually going to be led by the Spirit of God, and the image of God will be reflected in us and will guide us and lead us in the way of love. And we will be a discerning community that discerns what is godly and Christ-like and good. And when it comes to the things beyond what Jesus encouraged us as the actual examples of what this looks like, we say, hang on a second, that music I'm listening to, for me, in this season of my life, I make a commitment, I'm not going to listen to that because that does not do my heart or my mind good. That's my conviction. And I don't make that conviction for anyone else. If you're an adult over 18 and you say, for me, drinking alcohol is not good for me, that's going to be different to someone else. But you impose a rule on someone else, you're walking into religious systems and structures that always end up doing damage for people. And so we always begin with, for me, for my home, for what I govern, I know this is not good for me. For some people, it's, I will not go on social media. But if you get out and preach, you shouldn't go on social media, it's dangerous. You got to decide for yourself. If it's unhelpful and it's not helping you, you say, hey, for me, this is my commitment. And I love telling this to our young people. I've talked about this at youth events. When you turn up to a party, you don't have to go into a whole thing about why you do or don't do what you do. You just say, oh, for me, it's not good. For me, that environment's just not good for me. You have to make other kids feel bad for going to a party or whatever. It's like, no, for me, it's no good. And then you hit that secret button on your phone and it sends a text to your older brother or sibling or your uncle or auntie or your mum and dad, and then they come and pick you up because for you, you made a commitment. That's not a great environment for me. When I was young, there were some environments that at that stage in my life were no good for me. And now, those same environments are so good for me. Like, you're going, what? I want to know what that is. I'm not telling you. You got to discern the season of life that you're in. Go, for me, this is what it means for me to follow Christ. And we discern and we work out what's going to help us walk in the way of reflecting the image of God in our life. So be careful of religious rules beyond Jesus' teaching. Don't force your commitments on others. If your commitments encourage or help someone else, great. Be comfortable. Like, own them. Like, share why they help you, but don't make someone else feel shamed because of that commitment. And here's the question I want to leave us all with today, and this is, what do I need to commit to in this season of my life so I reflect the image of God? Because when the king, most likely at the beginning of the new reign of the kingship, would stand up and they would declare this Psalm 101, Commitment 101, they would be declaring, as I worship the God who is loyal, who is just, who is good, who is perfect and pure and true, who is merciful and loving and eternally gracious, I will do these things. I will commit to live this way. And these are my core convictions. So my challenge to you is, what is that for you? The Apostle Paul said, as an example, there were Christians who, when they were eating meat, and you're going to go, this is a bit weird if you're not used to this idea, but meat that had been sacrificed to idols, Paul says, hey, if your conscience tells you that is going to be sinful or that's not good for you to do it, then don't do it. Because you'll be going against what's going to help you reflect your conviction about that. But he goes on and then he teaches in a broader sense, but you're free. These idols aren't real. They're not alive. They have no power. You're free. You can eat whatever you want. And if you are free in your conscience, you can participate in that. But don't make somebody else stumble. Why? Because the law of Christ is the law of love. Which is why some people I'm around, I don't drink alcohol. And I don't say that to you, for you to do that, for me. There are just some environments where this feels unloving for me because I know what this person's journeyed. For me. as an act of love of reflecting the image of God. And so what is it for you that in this season, today, young people to the most senior person in this room, that you need to make a commitment to say, just like Joshua did in Joshua chapter 24, verse 15, as for me, and in, he includes his house, it was part of the language of the day, but as for me and my house, in other words, as to what I govern and I'm in charge of and I'm responsible for, we will serve the Lord. This is a core conviction of the heart. But then you got to work out in the day-to-day. What's that look like for you? What do you eat? What do you drink? Where do you go? Where do you hang out? Who do you hang out with? What's that look like? And if for you, you go, that doesn't help me, then make a commitment for this season. This doesn't help me. And then if you get past it and go, now that's not a problem for me anymore. Cool, make a fresh commitment. When I'm with them, I can now be in that environment and I'm going to actually be the influence, not influenced by. And this will liberate you. This will set you free. And this helps us all in how we encourage one another. Because when you meet up and someone enthusiastically wants to give you advice, oh, you shouldn't do that, you can discern and go, well, this is their passion and commitment they're projecting on me at the moment. And you can say, they got a good heart, good intention, they care about me. I need to listen to it and pay attention in case it is relevant for me. But if you are the mentor, the friend who's guiding someone, you can share, hey, for me, that didn't help me. But what's wise for you? What do you sense the Spirit of God inviting you to do in the way of Jesus and his life and his love as he's invited us into? So that's my encouragement to you today. What's God saying to you about the commitments you need to make for this season that you're going into? Can we stand together this morning?
Thanks for listening. If you have a spare moment, it'd be amazing if you could follow us on social media or give the podcast a follow or even a 5-star review. It all helps in getting the good news out there. Otherwise, I hope you have a fantastic week. Peace.